The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
I have an in for Pat. Now, regular listeners will know that David Robert Grimes, author and disinformation expert, has a regular slot on the show where he picks out stories and happenings in relation to online disinformation, misinformation, which unsuspecting people can be lulled into being misled. And he has a political story, which is very interesting, because there's a general election happening this week, the 28th, when's that, this weekend, in Moldova. And Moldova is one of those East European countries that could be under the gaze of Putin's ambitions, along with Estonia and so on. So you can see how there's skin in the game. If they want to join the EU, Russia would be totally opposed to that. So, David, welcome. So just give us a context of what the political landscape is like in Moldova.
So this story might give people a sense of deja vu, because about 2 years ago, there was a referendum in Moldova. Now, Moldova, formerly a USSR, a satellite country, has very much leaned towards being a member of the European Union and the standards and living increase that come with that. And Russia, of course, as you point out, are not particularly happy with that. So they've put a lot of effort into this. 2 years ago, there was a referendum on whether people would want to join the European Union. Now, obviously not binding at that point, but just to check it. Russia spent a lot of money at the time trying to influence that referendum. And very narrowly, it passed in favor of EU membership. Now, you've got to put in context, Moldova is a country that 2.4 million people. It's a very small country, very close to Russia, where that influence is exerted as much as they can. Now, this, as you point out, this weekend, there is a parliamentary election. So only 2 years on from the referendum. And a BBC investigation sent a reporter out there who was paid money to join a group that is pumping out Russian disinformation about the European Union. So this BBC reporter joined a group of people, normal Moldovan citizens, who were being paid by Russia about $170 a month to put out posts on TikTok and Instagram and to conduct on-street interviews that were sympathetic to Russia. And this is quite a massive undertaking for such a small country. But this is very much in the Russian playbook of influence and mislead and try to create an appearance of a groundswell of support for Russia, when in fact the population is, from the last referendum and from young polling, is actually very pro-European.
So, but the particular context is not a referendum, but a general election, a presumably parliamentary election. Who are the main players?
So the main players are the PAS. They are the European. Now, I'm going to try to get the pronunciation right here, but I will. It's a Party of Action and Solidarity, PAS. That is the translation. And they are pro-European. Their main opposition is the BEP, which is the pro-Russian Patriotic Electoral Bloc. So it basically comes down to a two-horse race. Now, I know I'm simplifying Moldovan politics a little bit for that. But the BEP are quite heavily Russian-funded. Back in 2023, it was found that Russian money was pouring into them to push a lot of these narratives. But what's quite sinister is how it's being done. It's not just that it's they start off training. They have a training seminar the BBC reporter went on, which is from your kitchen table to national leader, where it's teaching people to make videos that start off about Moldovan pride and Moldovan history. Not really objectionable content, a bit about history, and then starting to insert more and more propaganda messages after they've built up a following, and then going straight into outright disinformation and lies about the election. And this is a really sinister trick that we see in disinformation. If you build a parasocial trust about, you know, mundane topics that people can all agree on, people kind of put you in their mental green list and go, oh, that person's okay, I like their content. And then it's like the frog in boiling water. You're turning up the temperature. People already built an audience. And this is unfortunately a really common pattern we see in Russian disinformation.
When this BBC journalist got involved in it, he tracked it down to Evrasia, which is a non-profit organisation tied to this guy, Shore.
Ian Shore,
Tell me about him.
Well, he's very much Russian-aligned. And also Evrasia, the party, the blocker, they were censored by the European Union, the UK and the US, for running disinformation back in 2023 in Moldova. So they basically got that it's been known for quite a long time that this is a very much a pro-Russian front group. But their influence has not waned in so much as how much their intentions on Moldova haven't changed. But I think what's more interesting...
And what format? Like, you can do the videos of saying, oh, Russia's great and the EU's a disaster and it'll take away our sovereignty or different things. Like, what techniques? Is it polls and fake
so
polls?
So this is really interesting because in Moldova, polling without a license is actually illegal. It's quite... And this probably goes back to their complicated history of being, you know, volleyed between Russia and restrictive.
Yeah.
So what these people are doing is they're doing TikTok videos. They're trained to do this. And they go up Instagram video where they interview people, but they only curate the people they interview who say pro-Russia things. And the idea is, and this is where you sow doubt, if the PAS win this election, that they will just flood social media all these pro-Russian sound clips and go, oh, the election was fixed. That's one of the narratives that they're already setting their stall on, the election is fixed. And they'll have all this anecdotal evidence. They're also leading questions. They're only taking interviews. They lead questions towards people saying something pro-Russian. So it's quite sinister, but it creates an impression.
Okay.
Even if they lose, they can create the impression that the election was fixed. Have we heard that before, Ivan? I feel we have.
Indeed. The other story you have is closer to home. And this relates to the Minister for Education, Helen McEntee, has announced a change. Because kids go to school, start school, nearer to five now than three they used to back in the day. They're leaving, they're in fifth and sixth class later. And so puberty is knocking on their door, maybe 13, 14 and so on. So what's the change and what's the disinformation that's come from the change?
So this is the first time in many, many years that the SPHE syllabus is being revised. Now, about 2 years ago, they were talking about the revisions they would make to it. And there was people up in arms claiming it was going to be teaching gender ideology and making everyone gay and all the unhinged things that X says, right?
Okay.
The artist formerly known as Twitter. And at the time, there was pushback from the Department of Education saying, no, we're just informing people about puberty, about sexual orientation a little bit earlier. So children will be learning about sexual orientation in fifth and sixth class when they range from about 11 to 13.
So what was the disinformation?
Well, this is that itself is true. They're going to start being trained.
Yeah.
What has since come out, and that what the minister is referring to is a spate of things online claiming that this is part of an international gay agenda or a woke agenda to, and now depending on how unhinged on the rabbit hole you go.
Yeah, but the most controversial is the transgender agenda. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like
those claims, yes. Yeah. And things that I think that is being introduced in the secondary school education.
Okay. So this is about sexual orientation.
This is basic stuff about orientation.
Now
this is like this is pointing out. This is just telling primary school kids that some people are gay.
Okay.
Now that's not a huge change if you think about it.
Yeah.
And you'd think in 2025 no one should care, but people do.
But
and the minister
surely,
has got a lot of pushback on that.
Surely, in this whole series of disinformation, surely the message is everyone has to have their own filter. You've got to take personal responsibility for what you believe.
Oh, absolutely. And also be able to stand over the evidence for what I believe is X, Y, or Z. But the reason this is kind of nefarious is this is a rehashing of what we call a moral panic. And a moral panic is when you come up with some folk devil and you exaggerate their harms or influences and then make it seem like it's a sinister conspiracy theory. So a moral panic back in the 1980s, there was an idea that there was satanic sexual offenders in primary schools in America that led to 400 people being arrested. These crimes never happened. They didn't exist. There was not a satanic sect abusing children. I've written about that quite a bit. But moral panics about gay people are unfortunately very, very common. We had them in the 1970s, 80s and 90s. And some of these narratives that have started popping up online that the minister's referring to are the idea that we're going to be educating children to turn them gay, which is ridiculous both biologically and morally. It makes no sense. But the minister's statement, I think, comes on the back of a lot of that pushback. There's an idea as well. This ties into big pharma conspiracy theories. There is a strange subset of the online spaces that claim that the reason they're promoting what they call gender ideology is because they want to sell drugs that'll help children be transgendered. This is absolute nonsense. But hey, it gets traction online. So
okay, that's this week's installment of Disinformation, Misinformation. My thanks to David Robert Grimes, author and disinformation expert. Things you didn't know in relation to Moldova. Very, very interesting indeed. Now,
sport on the Pat Kenny Show.
With Visit Pennsylvania, experience the World Cup on the 4th of July only in Philadelphia. Search visitpa.com.
Well, it's sport with a quirky twist on it, because Cameron Hill is here from Off the Ball, and he delves into peculiar little backstories that are enigmatic and intriguing. And today we're going to talk about soccer clubs. So the salvation of so many clubs has been a hugely wealthy organisation, whether it's Man City or whether it's Newcastle or others, who have owners who come in. So you have Tom Brady bought into Birmingham FC. Of course, the real fairy tale success story of the Welsh club in North Wales, Wrexham, whereby Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney bought into it. So these are unusual people who had no background in football, and supporters, you know, who look at maybe regrading their whole and upgrading their whole club. But today, Cameron, you have a story about Notts County.
Indeed, Ivan, one of the oldest football clubs, in fact, the oldest professional football club in the world, founded in 1862. Now, by the 20th century, they'd fallen on rough times. In fact, between 2002 and 2003, they spent 534 days in administration, with 6 days from total collapse, being expelled from the Football League, which they helped set up when a consortium, the Blenheim Consortium, swooped in to save the day. So not a great start to the 21st century. Their ambition was to return to the Championship, where they felt they belonged. And in the summer of 2009, in fact, they looked to have had their salvation.
So the owner at that time was the credit card entrepreneur Peter Tremling. Who was the White Knight?
So there was apparently a consortium from the Middle East interested in purchasing a stake in the club, and a delegation from Notts County go off to Bahrain and are whisked off by limo to the Ritz-Carlton in its capital of Manama. The mysterious potential investors, known as Munto Finance, they're apparently impossible to track down to this day, give this great presentation before an overweight bearded man walked in with a gold-tipped cane and hovers in the background, kind of just listening in. And his name is Russell King. He becomes very important later on. John Holmes, head of the club supporters group, demanded a bank guarantee with these new investors. He'd been down this road before. Unfortunately, this meeting was taking place on a Sunday night. But King suddenly disappears and after a few minutes returns with a bank guarantee worth £5 million from the prestigious First London Bank. The shareholders vote overwhelmingly in favour of the takeover because, for context, Manchester City just the previous August had been taken over by the Abu Dhabi United Group, and that summer they'd bought the likes of Carlos Tevez, Emmanuel Adebayor, Colo Torre. So the precedent was there that this is going to be good news for Notts County, so they were completely on board.
So the money came in, did it?
That's debatable.
But I mean, like you go on to say how they upgraded. They got new players, so they got a new manager. Tell us about that. But like, they had to get paid, surely.
Well, they did, absolutely. And Sven-Göran Eriksson was appointed the director
of football. English manager,
huge name. Notts County couldn't believe their luck. One of his first signings was goalkeeper Kasper Schmeichel, son of Peter, who went on to win the Premier League with Leicester in 2016. And he also got Saul Campbell to the club, the ex-England defender. He was offered £40,000 a week, apparently. But he made his debut against Morecambe in a defeat in the league. And 3 days after making that appearance, Campbell just suddenly leaves. We're not 100% sure why, but anecdotally, on the way out, he told his now former teammates, "Just watch your back here, lads. These guys aren't to be trusted." So already the red flag is there.
But was approval given by the authorities?
Well, the English Football League at this point had a fit and proper person test for ownership takeovers. The club's lawyers didn't really know enough about the new owners to be anything other than opaque. And lawyer Paul Fallon gives this description of Munto Finance as undisclosed interest under a discretionary trust. And the EFL bought it. So maybe not as watertight, that fit and proper person test.
So what was the backstory to Russell King?
So he first emerges as a chairman of a publishing company called Celebrity Group Holdings. He acquires Zodiac Toys, a toy retailer that went insolvent in 1990. And he himself was convicted of insurance fraud in 1991 after trying to claim that £600,000 over the theft of his Aston Martin, which was then discovered hidden in a friend's garage. He's sentenced to 2 years in prison and also gets embroiled in this embezzling scandal in a New Jersey, a Jersey-based firm called Belgravia in the mid-noughties. By the way, all this is coming out at the time in the press. The Sun are reporting that this guy King has a criminal conviction, and Notts County fans basically say, yeah, but, you know, it's fine. Who among us isn't perfect? So, you know, they when you have what football fans describe as suffering under poor financial management over the last couple of years, you gobble up any opportunity to get yourself back up to the place you feel you deserve to be. So they were fine with King's reputation.
So what happened then?
So he goes to Bahrain. Apparently, by the way, Ericsson was an investor in his company called Swiss Commodity Holdings, and he smooches his way into friendships, King does, with the Bahraini elite, gets his way into First London Bank with these investment opportunities worth up to £5 billion with the Bahrain royal family, which do not exist, in exchange for 49% of shares in the bank. So he's a major shareholder in this bank suddenly. Goes to Notts County, establishes this company called Swiss Commodity Holdings, and tells Sven, you're going to come with me to North Korea, because long story short, I'm trying to get a contract to secure their mineral ores and the right to mine them. So all the gold, iron ore and coal in North Korea in exchange for this huge deal. Brings Goran Eriksson to it because North Korea have just qualified for the 2010 World Cup, and they know Eriksson and ask him, can you fix our group stage draw so that we have an easy draw at the World Cup? They nearly get away with this. King is about to leave and says, yeah, fine. This, all your mineral ore in exchange for Bahraini oil and money from my made up Bahraini connections, we're going. They're stopped on the way because it seems actually this oil is not forthcoming and the North Koreans are not happy with them, and stopped before he can leave Pyongyang for Beijing. They're eventually let go. He's spooked. He heads back to Bahrain and basically just abandons Notts County. He doesn't appear back there again.
So what happened at the club?
So they had been struggling with mounting debts going into the millions because obviously this money wasn't coming, and creditors were coming knocking. Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs were coming knocking, and looking through the accounts, they also noticed that huge amounts were being paid to Russell King's wife. He hadn't signed any of these documents himself. He'd signed them under the pseudonym Lord Voldemort. So nothing could link him to the ownership of Notts County. And eventually Peter Trembling has to purchase the club, sell it on to Ray True, who gets them out of the hole. And bizarrely, they go on and win the League Two title that year. It's a crazy, crazy story that's told in more detail by the BBC in Sport's Strangest Crimes. But King never had to answer for this.
Well, it's amazing how a story of smoke and mirrors, essentially, wasn't caught in due diligence. People were so desperate. But Notts County to this day, how are they doing?
They're
not
still
far
in League
to the main club, aren't they?
They are, and they're not happy with that. But they're still in League Two playing their trade and still there, because it would be a shame for the oldest club in the world to have to go bust.
Indeed. Okay, and Forest got new owners as well. Many thanks indeed. Really fascinating story that went wrong for Notts County. Our thanks to Cameron Hill of Off the Ball.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.